Yay, you're here! I'm Lisa Whittle, and welcome to the Jesus Over Everything interview show, affectionately known as Joe's Friday Friend, where everyone I sit down and talk with is either an old or a new friend of mine. You are in for some fun today, friend. An absolute delight is on our show. Singer, songwriter, actor, producer, oh, and two-time Grammy nominee and Dove Award winner, Jamie Grace, is on Joe. Here's a fun fact about Jamie Grace. She's actually a Joe listener. She's also my friend. I love Jamie, and I'm so honored to have her join me for a spirited and also meaningful conversation about her personal struggles with navigating fame at a young age, her own experiences with mental health, and her wonderful new book called Finding Quiet, which is much more than what you may think by its title. Before we dive in, a big thanks to Dwell, my partner, that amazing audio Bible app with plans to help you read through the Bible in a year through listening. A lot of you prefer to listen to things. I love that. Head to the show notes to click the link or lisawhittle.com/Dwell for 20% off just the rest of this month. And now here we go with a talk I think you'll love with my friend, Jamie Grace. This is a really fun conversation for me because we have on, besides just like just a fabulous human and like a famous person, we have a listener of the show on, Jamie Grace. Friend, you're a Joe supporter, right?
I am. I am a Lisa Whittle super fan. That's how we connected is like, I felt like you were way too far into my business and just calling me out on my mess on your show. And I was like, I could either, you know, be mad at this lady and block her from my Instagram before we become friends, or I could just support the show and just,
I'm glad you went with the latter. I'm really glad you, because that would have felt awful if you'd have blocked me. But
it was a battle. It was a battle.
Well, I'm glad that the good side won because we've become friends, and it really means so much to me. You mean a lot to me. You did the book Jesus Over Everything for your book club. You came on. You did an Instagram Live with me.
Yeah.
You have been really generous with me, and I get this impression that's just sort of who you are. So here's what I want to know from you. Are you just really good to your people, like people that you love, that you connect with? Are you just really good to us? Or are you one of those people that you're just a good soul, and so maybe then you struggle to say no to people? Which one of those are you? Or are you both?
I will say I've learned how to say no recently. So, and recently, yeah. I mean, maybe my 20s. And so we're good there. Don't worry.
Turn me down if you wanted to. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, here's a fun little fact about me. It's not always fun, but I can't lie. If I don't want to do something, it's not even like I've always struggled with saying no. Like, I just struggle with how to say no, if that makes sense. Because lying, I will literally like start crying. I won't be able to eat for 2 to 3 days. Like, I cannot lie. And so there's that. But also, I'm a little bit of an extremist sometimes with humans, which is not always a great quality either. I'm really big on like talking about like stuff I'm good at, but then reminding people that I suck at it. But yeah, it's like I love humans. And when I'm like really blessed by like a human or something they wrote or said or something, like I know that it's not just for me to hoard and just keep for myself. And so that's how, you know, your book really blessed me, your message really blessed me. And so that's kind of how that started. But yeah, like, I mean, this is like, maybe it's bad to say, like, I don't know if like other people do this. I don't know if this is like a millennial thing, but like if like a guy, for example, like breaks one of my friend's hearts, like I will like, I should not say this on the internet, but you know what? Whatever. It's 2020. Anything can happen.
no one's listening. Just us.
Right. Yeah. It's just us. It's just us. You're not famous. No, like literally I have more than once like gone on Instagram to like block somebody on Instagram that doesn't follow me at all. But like, I know that they like broke my friend's heart. So I'm just like, I don't even want us to pretend to cross paths.
Yeah.
So I'm like, look, if I love you, I love you. But if you like, not saying that there's not grace for you, but like, that's bad. I might need to go pray about that, Lisa. We can just move on. So how was your day?
You know what? I'm actually feeling all of this a lot. I feel like in some ways, maybe this is why we've connected so strongly. I feel this in such a deep way because part of me is like, is she an Enneagram 8? Because this is very on brand for that.
My wing is very strong.
I'm the same way. Like, I love my people so strongly. So if I've connected with you, if we've connected at the heart, I'm with you, and you almost can't get rid of me. Like, there's mm-hmm. almost nothing you can do to shake me off, you know?
Right.
And also if someone hurts my people, they've long gotten over it. I'm still mad about it. You know,
right.
I'm like, I'm
right.
still mad about the fact that person hurt you 7 years ago. You know what
right.
I mean? I sound really petty right now.
No, I get that. I fully get that. Are you an Enneagram 8?
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
said your husband's a 7 as well.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
And I think that's another reason why you and I probably really connect as well is because something else that, and I've learned as an Enneagram thing, and I'm trying to still figure out how to navigate through this and whatnot, but I tend to have really strong connections with people. And so mm-hmm. when I do, you know, like for you, like you, for example, like you and I have never talked on the phone. We've never met in person, but we've talked on Instagram Live. I know that I could call you with anything at any time. I literally just did a few weeks ago. I was like, hey, Lisa, I might need to talk to somebody about something. Can it be you? But at the same time, you don't expect me to like text you back within 5 minutes if you ask me how's my weekend, you know?
Right.
So I
right.
think that you being married to a 7, maybe that helps a lot, because I struggle with that. I'll build really strong, like explosive, like connections with humans. And when we talk, it's amazing. But then I'm not able to do like the day-to-day like relationship. And then I feel like a terrible person. And so I think that's another reason why we connect. Cause you know that I'm not trying to be a butthead. I just have a lot of stuff to do.
You just might not text back for a while. Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think it is good to, that's why, you know, I mean, look, the Enneagram's not the end all be all, but I do think it's a good tool for us to be able to use, to be able to, you know, see personalities, know kind of how we roll. I related to the fact of like, it's hard for me to lie as well. I'm so literal, and I'm, you know, my husband will often say like, Lisa, they didn't lie about that. I'm like, yeah, well, what do you call it? That's actually a lie, you know? So I'm very much black and white, very much, you know, that's a lie or it's not. So I get all that. Anyway, we relate. That's the bottom line. Okay. Can we talk about this baby of yours, this baby girl?
Oh, what do you want to know? I could talk about her all day.
Well, of course you could. You're a mother. Okay. All the names. Do you call her Bella? Is it Izzy?
So okay. Her name is, you know, I'm Southern, so we have to get all the connections in there. So her name is Isabella Brave Harper Collins.
Love it.
I wanted her to have options as she gets older. So there's that. So Bella is the most consistent one within like our family, within our little quarantine pod. Bella is the most consistent nickname. I call her Bravy a lot. My husband, his nickname changes like once a week. He calls her Chicken a lot. I don't really know why, but she thinks it's hilarious. Like we love the musical Hamilton.
Yeah.
And so he'll run around the house, be like, what's your name, man? Chicken Man. And she just thinks it's so funny. So I'm like, great. My 1-year-old's called Chicken Man. We're weird. So it's Bella, Belle, Bella Boo, Bella Brave, Bravy Baby, Harp, Harper.
This all feels very much like my family as well. I feel like this could be exactly what's happened here. All the nicknames and none of them. And like half of them don't make sense. Like if I told you, I'm not going to because he would kill me because my son's 20. But if I told you like his nickname, you'd be like, how do you get that out of Micah? It makes no sense. It's such a departure. Don't even start with the same, you know, letter. It just doesn't even make sense. But this is how far we evolve when we start doing the nicknames. Were you scared to be a mom? Like, I was a little bit scared to be a mom. Were you scared or no?
Yes and no. Because I was like professionally single for so long, I had really kind of started to, and even before I was an adult, I've always wanted to be a foster mom and maybe an adoptive mom. And so that was just what was on my mind, like at all times. Like literally everything I've ever done, whether like from age, not being sarcastic, but from age 7 was always done with, well, can I still do this and be a foster mom in the future? So that was the way that I anticipated motherhood to happen for me. So I wasn't scared. I was very much ready. At least I don't know if like the Lord would say that I was ready, but like I felt ready.
So
there was that. But at the same time, when I got married and when I fell in love, like, well, it happened the other way around. So like when I fell in love and then got married, I started thinking about just the concept of having a biological child. And I don't think I've ever thought about it. So I was definitely scared from that perspective, because it just brought about like just a whole new level of, you know, just very different from what I was planning on. So that was scary, but so far so good, you know. she's doing pretty cool.
She's such a doll. You're from this crazy creative family. For anyone who might not know, Morgan Harper Nichols is your sister.
Yes,
and
my claim to fame.
Well, I mean, you're both like wildly creative and amazing and have so many fans, both of you. But, and you're also your preacher's kids, and I am as well. What do you think are the advantages and disadvantages of growing up in that kind of environment?
Yeah. You know, I definitely, when I talk about my parents and the way that Morgan and I were both raised, I definitely try to make sure that I acknowledge that we were raised with a lot of privilege in that way, especially when it comes to faith privilege of just, I didn't know about a lot of the church hurt and church trauma that a lot of people faced until I was in college. I was very like passionately, you know, like saving sex till marriage, and I did that, and I'm proud that I did that, and I firmly believe it was the right choice. But I did not know about purity culture until like the last 4 to 5 years. And what I mean by purity culture is the way that people have expressed how damaging that it was even to their relationship with Jesus. And so we just like we grew up with just such a healthy perspective on so many things.
That's good.
And so I didn't know like even with like my health issues, I didn't know that there were going to be people that were going to say that I didn't have enough faith and that's why I was sick, because that's just not the way that my parents preached and taught. And so there was a lot of privilege in that for sure. And just the way that they, you know, like we're a Southern, and this is not to, I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable, but like we're a, you know, we're from Georgia, so we're like, you know, my accent will show up here and there, but my parents were never like, oh, we're from Georgia, we're from the South, we're Christians, so we're going to be Republicans. But also, like, if people don't know, we're Black. And so, like, they also, my parents were not like, oh, we're Black, so we're going to be Democrats. Like, I just, I did not know. I'm not kidding. Like, maybe 10 years ago is when I found out that, like, oh, is really divided by race, is a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times. And so I did not grow up with any type of extreme perspective on anything. Maybe with the exception of creativity. Like that was just the way that my mom just really loved. My mom's very creative. My dad's very creative. He plays the drums. She sings, and she, you know, I like to talk about how she would randomly find like a $5 instrument at a yard sale. And then we'd find out like years later, it's worth like hundreds of dollars on eBay or something, because she was she's just this quirky, fun, cool mom. Just very resourceful. And, you know, I maybe should also clarify, like my parents were missionary pastors, which is like a, you know, a PC way of saying like they didn't get paid. And so, you know, it's just we didn't grow up with a lot. But we grew up with like a lot of love, a lot of creativity, a lot of joy. And so, I'm going to be real with you. I have ADHD and I'm kind of blanking on what the question was, but I hope that I answered it.
No, you did. You did a fantastic job. And honestly, I love this because, for one, I think with all the, oh man, church hurts and like people that have grown up in maybe toxic church environments or with leadership, or, you know, you hear a lot of really hard stories about pastors' families or whatever. I think it is a breath of fresh air to hear from someone who said, I grew up in a really healthy environment. And I love that you are telling us about this culture that you're in, because I think we need to hear that. I think we need to hear this really positive experience that you had. And I believe that's part of why you are who you are today. I love who you are. I love your honesty. When is it hard for you to be honest? Or is there a time that it's ever hard for you to be honest?
I think one of the things that I struggle with is putting up boundaries when it comes to my honesty. I grew up on the internet, if you will. I was a teen star, which is such an awkward phrase, but it's one that I've learned that I need to embrace to deal with my own things in my brain. And it's very natural for me, and this is, I think people will have different opinions about this. It's not necessarily because I grew up with social media, but I think it's just because of how I've always used social media. It's very natural for me to just like grab a camera and just like start talking about everything. Now posting it, that doesn't always happen because I'm actually pretty good at censoring what I post. But yes, I mean, there have been times, and I don't do this as much now, but especially in my teen years, where if I was going through something, I would just get my camera out and record myself talking about it simply because that was the only way that I knew how. Was kind of channeling it through this like rallying around this community of like, okay, guys, we got to talk through this today. So I think that's one of the things I struggle with, at least have struggled with in the past. I dealt with the kind of, I think, what a lot of young women go through of just confiding in too many friends too deeply, too fast. You know what I mean? Like in college, high school and college, I dealt with that a lot of just like, oh, here's my roommate. Girl, guess what eighth grade was like for me? Like, oh my gosh, so listen to my deepest, darkest fear. So that's something that I've grown in for sure. But I think when it comes to honesty, I'm quite the open book. And so I have to be very intentional about, about not just spilling out all of my business all the time and just like, okay, this is what I'm going through. I saw something. I don't know if this is like a famous quote or just like something on Twitter. My sister's the smart one, but I saw something once and it was like, once you tell more than 2 to 3 people what's going on, you're not looking for a solution, you're just looking for attention. Yeah,
Interesting.
and I think that number obviously varies based on what you're going through, but it's something that has definitely resonated with me, because I kind of have myself like stop and think when I'm about to. Like I almost shared something on my Instagram story earlier, and I just thought like, what is my intention for posting this? Like, am I trying to get attention? Or am I just trying to encourage people? Or am I just trying to share my story? There's nothing wrong with just sharing my story, but what is my intention? And if I'm not, if I can't figure out what the intention is, then I'm probably oversharing. I'm probably doing too much, so.
That's really good. And I actually think that's a good kind of gauge for all of us with the internet, because we can all get it twisted that way. And sometimes I do the same things. And then I'll, so before maybe I'll post something, not that I've never gotten it wrong, because I have, but I'll
Same.
ask myself, why am I actually posting this? Is this valid? Is this important? Do I feel like I just need to post? Anytime I feel some kind of weird, either internal or external pressure to post something, it's never a good idea. So it's the pressure is not a good idea. But I think stepping back and saying, really kind of questioning the motive, why am I posting this? And kind of sitting in that for a minute. 9 out of 10 times when I can't figure out why, and I just put it down or walk away from it, and give it about, I don't know, 10 minutes. I'll be like, well, I don't want to post that. And I don't, so that's usually the best thing that ever happens to any of us, is that I don't post whatever that was.
My sister and I have a trend of, just sometimes we'll just like text each other things and we'll just be like, hey, can I post this? 95% of the time, it's no.
Yeah, I know, but I love it when I actually have a friend like that too. And I think that is so valuable, because to ask someone else, maybe that's a piece of advice to someone who's like, I don't know what I should post. Get you a friend who will tell you if it's not a, fortunately you have a sister like this, but if you don't have a sister like this, get you a friend who you can send them stuff and have them vet it and say, is this a good idea? Because we need that sometimes. It's really good.
Because
Yeah, it's really good.
I had this joke like a couple weeks ago. I was like, this is hilarious. So I called my sister. I was like, listen to this joke. And she had just gotten the comeback from like the dentist, like one of those regular grown-up visits where you just go get your teeth brushed. That sounded so demeaning to dentists. Oh my goodness.
Well,
But
I
I
went to
just,
the dentist this week, so I'm feeling
oh,
this in a
I was
major
just
way.
like, like my sister, she's like a public figure. I was like, guys, it was just like a routine thing. I didn't want to like put her business out there. Anyways, right. It's out there. She'll be fine. I called her and she like could barely talk. She was like, little girl, no. Yeah. And I took it a step further. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. So I called her other friend, Melinda. And I was like, Melinda, listen. And Melinda was like, no, you can't post it. Lisa, that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. I needed attention. I called my mom. I said, mommy, like that's literally how I said it. I was like, mommy, this is really funny. Listen. And she literally said, if you post that on the internet, like I'm done. Because she's my manager. So she was like, like, I'm not cleaning
She's
it.
She's quitting.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? Fine. I told three people. Well, I got my laughs. I'm fine.
That's hilarious. Well, she was imagining all the DMs and all the right. all the problems. She's like, don't you dare post that. I love it. Talking about you really kind of getting fame as a young person, do you think because you got famous so young, people have that impression of you stuck in their minds and then maybe want you to stay there? So changing has been harder for them maybe than even for you, or have they let you grow up?
Yeah, everybody's been so gracious about it. I feel like the internet has just been this welcoming warm pool of people.
Right.
Man, I've always had such a compassion for Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And I will very casually say things like, yeah, my future friend Demi Lovato, you know, things like that. My future friend Selena Gomez, like, because I like I'm not saying it in a weird I don't know, whatever kind of weird way, but I just genuinely believe that I haven't an understanding on a significantly smaller scale right. of what they must have gone through. And again, significantly sure. smaller scale. But, you know, when I was 17, well, I started making YouTube videos at 14 years old. And then when I was 17 years old, you know, TBN, which is one of the biggest networks in the country or world, I think, the Christian television network, they discovered me, if you will. And I moved to Tennessee. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but they actually have like a campus in Tennessee with like houses, like actually fully furnished houses. And
wow.
So I moved to TBN at 17.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I lived there like every other week. And then I went to college in Nashville and lived in the dorm on my opposite weeks. And okay. So I lived at TBN with a bunch of other teenagers and we filmed a TV show. And wow. Then we would go and live on a tour bus on the weekends and then come back and live at TBN and film the show during the week. And so that's kind of how things got started for me. And then I, you know, was with a record label and radio and award shows and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I grew up publicly. You know, people saw my life. They saw the behind the scenes on YouTube and all that kind of thing. And I do think it was hard for people to see me grow up. I think on a practical sense, just because, like, just very practically, all of the people that have ever seen me on TV when I was a, you know, a fetus, like, they're not going to be watching my every move. So they might come back 5 years later, and then I get the comments on a regular basis, like, whoa, when did you get married and have a kid? you know, and I'm like, what? Like, do the math. Like, she looks short. Maybe a year ago, you know.
Yeah.
That's just me being a goofball. I'm not actually bothered by that, but...
Right.
I think people had a hard time with it for sure. And then I dealt with some pressure with people that I worked with who wanted to, I think people struggled with professional relationships, with the exception of my mom, who's my manager, but professional relationships struggled with that. They mm-hmm. didn't know how to deal with that, how to age me or not to age me. You know, I was kind of very strongly discouraged from dating because it was, and I didn't listen to that because I was like, excuse me, I'm trying to get wifed up at some point.
Right.
but I was just strongly discouraged from dating because it would kind of age me. And then I was also discouraged from singing certain songs that would make me seem too youthful. I was discouraged from doing certain things that would make me seem too black. I was discouraged from doing things that would make me feel too Southern. It was like, you know, just sometimes being in the public eye when it's a certain magnitude, it's, you have to be, I don't think you should be, but you kind of have to be as safe as possible, as attainable as possible. And any ounce of adversity or change in your personal life has to be masqueraded and covered, because that's scary to the viewer. That's scary to the listener. I think we're, you know, making listeners and viewers sound very incompetent, but that's just kind of how it works. So I definitely struggled with that, like trying to, in a very cliche way, just be myself, but feeling like at every turn it was like, well, no, you be yourself to the extent that it's relatable to every single person possible. So
I hear that, and I could see how that would be hard, that transition, because I think everybody who has some level of influence certainly feels like there are expectations, there are folks that want you to go this way or that, or don't say this or do say that. And it does feel stifling. And especially for young women who I'm sure people had lots of say, or they wanted to have lots of say. And making a transition would be hard. So I can imagine. Well, holidays can be a huge trigger with mental health. You've been really open about this. Can you talk a little bit about your journey with mental health? And I know that's like a big question, but I mean, on a very real level, as I know you will be, how is God meeting you there, and how has he met you there?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was 11, I was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome, OCD, ADHD, and anxiety. And the primary thing that I battled with was, well, all four of those things, but the most pressing thing at that time was my Tourette, which is a tic disorder. And so my physical and vocal tics, you know, they're uncontrollable, and the severity of them made everyday tasks very daunting, just walking and talking and holding anything, because my tics were constantly interrupting me every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And so I didn't necessarily, even though I had the diagnosis, I didn't necessarily have the language to fully even understand my own anxiety at that time. Even now, like, you know, I'll be 29 in a few weeks, and I'll still have moments where I'm like, wait, that's anxiety. Oh, I get it. It makes sense. You know, like where I'm still understanding it. But especially as a kid, like I knew that I was stressed out all the time, and I knew that I felt weird and thought my brain like didn't seem to understand information all the time. But I didn't really have the language to understand it. You know, I think just acknowledging my parents again, my relationship with them was just so crucial. My relationship with my sister was so crucial. And I know that ultimately, like, you can't rely on anybody else's faith, right? Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, they're Christians, so I don't really have to put in the work. I don't need to read my Bible and pray because, you know, I've got to pray and grandmother, you know, I don't have to worry about that. But at the same time, when you're not able to fight for yourself, you have to, well, just all the time, but especially when you're not able to fight for yourself, you need to surround yourself with people who can fight for you, who can pray for you, who are praying over you. And so my parents and their relationship with the Lord really helped carry me for the years that I struggled there, because I really struggled with how I could have all of these battles and things, you know, and I could still be considered a child of God. I didn't really understand that. You know, like I said, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, but somehow like our bills would just get paid, you know, like a random person would just want to like bless us with money to like pay a bill or something, or I like whatever it was. And like, I was just like, hey, Lord, you know, I remember being like a kid being like, Lord, super cool that you paid the light bill. How about we live in the dark for a month and you like fix my other problems? You know, like I totally respect the whole water thing. We can have an outhouse. I'm tired of ticking, you know? And so I didn't understand that at all. That was a huge battle for me. But one thing my parents just always reminded me of is like, it's okay for me to hurt, you know? Like they of course preached about God's healing and things like that, but like they weren't like, they didn't like push me to be like, okay, God's going to fix it tomorrow if you pray three more times and click your heels. Like, it wasn't like that. Like, my parents, they're, you know, my biological mom and dad, and then my sister, they're her biological mom and dad as well. But our parents fostered a lot of children. And so I would see a lot of kids coming in and out of the house and seeing like the adversity that they were facing as well. And just seeing them like still find joy in like small things. So that helped a lot. Just seeing them build relationships with God or build relationships with my parents who were God-fearing people, even through what they were going through. And I was like, man, like that was encouraging to my faith. And so, yeah, it was just a lot of learning to embrace all of the above, like that I don't have to have everything fixed today, but it might get fixed tomorrow. But even if it doesn't, like I'm going to have hope, even though I'm hurting, I'm going to have joy, even though I'm in pain, just learning to embrace like all of that.
I think so many things you're saying here are really important, and especially for even for like the perspective of a parent listening that might have a child that has a disability or has an issue with their mental health. Even you just saying that your parents said it's okay to hurt and didn't, you know, try to constantly say this will be healed or here's how you get fixed or whatever the case may be, that they were practical while at the same time providing a lot of hope and belief that God can. God doesn't always in the way we think he should. And I think mm-hmm. that's a real good word for a parent who has a child going through something like that. More than anything, what I hear you saying is for the parent to love and be in there and in the trenches with their child and let their child, voice their feelings and not shame them for their feelings and be there and sort through those feelings. I think that's super powerful. So one of the biggest struggles, I think, for folks who maybe suffer from something with their mental health is not knowing how to ask for help. Mm-hmm. So how do we let down our pride or our thoughts that we're going to be a burden to someone when we're struggling and say, hey, I need help right now?
Right. And I think one of the main things for me is just like really learning like how to press into feelings and like know that feelings are not always absolute and feelings are not always forever. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I've learned how to grieve and learn how to hurt when I am sick, you know, because I still have really bad days to this day. You know, for the most part, I live a very, what you would call a traditional lifestyle as far as my health goes. But at least a couple times a month, I have bad mental health days. And so I've learned how to press into that grieving and press into that hurt, knowing that those feelings are not going to last always. And so when it comes to asking for help, I implement that same practice of like, like this feels weird, like, and being okay with it feeling weird. Because yeah. I think sometimes we give off the misconception of like, you know, like, oh, like, you just gotta just reach out for help. You know, you'll feel so strong. You'll feel so much better when you do. You might not feel better right away. It might feel embarrassing. It might feel humiliating. You know, it might not feel that good. I was before you and I were chatting, I was chatting with a friend of our family's who's also an awesome author and podcaster, Crystal Hurst, Crystal Evans Hurst. And she actually came to visit when the baby was like 2 months old. And this was way before quarantine. The baby's 1.5 now.
Right.
And so she came to visit during then. She and her husband came by, and it was, you know, myself and my husband and the baby, and she held her for a while and all that kind of stuff. So fast forward to us talking today, we really hadn't talked like, you know, for more than a few minutes since then. And I was just kind of sharing with her that at that time I was very depressed, and I really didn't know a lot about postpartum depression, but it was very obvious that that's what was going on very early on. I dealt with depression while I was pregnant as well, and very shortly after being diagnosed with postpartum depression, I was medicated for it. And so I literally saw Crystal probably days before I hit a wall where I just couldn't. And I was telling Crystal that, and I I kind of sensed, but I said to her, I was like, I don't know if you noticed. And she smiled at me. You know, she's a mama and a grandmama. She was like, kind of like giving me the, like, yeah, baby, I noticed. And just being real, I'm so glad she noticed. Because when I reflect on that moment, I remember her holding my daughter for such a long time. And I remember the physical relief that I had having help, you know, and, you know, I have an amazing village. My mom and dad were over all the time. I'm so grateful for them. But I want to mention that because I want it to be known that, like, Crystal's not, she's a friend of ours for sure. But, you know, I don't know Crystal crazy well. We don't talk often. But right. What I'm getting at is, like, there are moments where God is sending very obvious times, where he's sending people in our lives. And it might feel weird to say, hey, Crystal, family friend that I see once every couple of years at a random speaking event, you're in town. Can you come hold my baby so that I can rest for 15 minutes? Mm. You know, that might feel a little embarrassing to welcome someone into your home and they can tell that you just sprayed Lysol for 20 minutes, hoping that they couldn't tell that you haven't cleaned in weeks. It might feel embarrassing. It might feel hard. So that's the thing, is like, I'm press into those feelings, but also more than you press into those feelings, press into the truth and know that the truth is that God has sent this person, God has sent this resource, God has sent this podcast. You know, you're seeing this book for a reason. That one random friend that keeps showing up on your Instagram feed, they're showing up for a reason, probably the algorithm, but also probably the fact that God is like, look, reach out. Push past those feelings, push into them so that you can push past them into the truth, and reach out and ask for help. Like, it's weird. It can feel weird, but it's worth it in the end.
That is super good. And yeah, I mean, I love that you're, you know, pointing out things that we might overlook in a way. It's like, pay attention, because a lot of times I think we pray and we say, God, I just need a sign, or God, I just need to feel you. But then we might see something on Instagram and we might just keep scrolling or bypass. And we might like, oh, that's good. But we don't really look at it. And we think God's not bigger than an algorithm. I mean, he is, you know? So it's like, yeah, I mean, he can bring us stuff through crazy social media, and I do believe it. And so that's beautiful. And that is so good. And I hope that encourages somebody today. Well, you wrote a book. You wrote a book, girl.
I did. I wrote a lot of words, and I'm finished.
You wrote a lot of words.
I'm never doing it again. I'm just kidding.
I am so proud of you. It is hard work. It is such hard work. People don't know how hard of work it is to write a book, but I just want to say bravo. It's called Finding Quiet. It's very much, this is what I'll say, it's very much Jamie Grace, and I mean that in such a tender way, because it's this. I find it honest and loving and real, and it has just a tinge of that sort of angsty artist that I love so much.
You.
Yeah, I love that. All of those things. I also love that this book is about finding quiet, because that is something I think we crave, and it is scarce. And I have to tell you that I think it's because I'm old, but I'm almost adverse to noise anymore. I don't like a lot of noise. And I think it's because we're just such an inundated culture with noise. But is finding quiet possible in this world?
Man, thanks for having me. Have a great day. You know, I'm so glad that we talked.
You know, I'm going to ask the hard question, but obviously it is, because you found it and you wrote about it.
Right. And I found it, and I'm still looking as well.
You're still going. Finding it.
It's one of those things that I'm a very literal person. Yeah. So it is literally possible to find quiet. But then at the same time, there are times where we may not be able to silence all of the noise around us, but we can be intentional about the noise that we continue to add. You know, I like to share the story of, like, a couple weeks ago, I said, I like to share the story. And then I said a couple weeks ago, like, I'm some 90-year-old that's been telling the story from the village that I grew up in, back in Europe or something. A couple weeks ago, my daughter, my sweet little 16-month-old, you know, she's a baby, and babies don't always know that if they don't want to drink their milk, that they are still going to like have to drink their milk. And so she's learning that. I hope that lesson is finished, but part of me feels like it might last another 30 years. And so she was just kind of learning that she's got to do what she doesn't want to do. And that was hard on her, understandably. And it was hard on me because of the way that she was expressing herself. So I just kind of used the code word in the house, which was passing her to my husband by way of sitting her on the floor and walking upstairs.
Yeah.
I was like, you're in a safe space. There's some carpet. I love you. I'm a head out.
Right.
They came upstairs after a few minutes. Like, she really was not a disciplinary thing at all. She was just genuinely overwhelmed. And she loves her little toy farm, which is in our room. So she came upstairs. She and my husband came upstairs. The toy farm was going. I still have the TV on from like a couple hours ago. So there was that. He had something playing on his phone, which was something about basketball or football or somebody. And I literally like just went on our bed, put the comforter over my like entire body. I just like curled up in there like a little cocoon. And I found quiet for myself.
Mm-hmm.
The TV was going, farm was going, phone was going.
Yeah.
I'm not about to be like, you know, well, maybe some days I am, but I'm not about to be like, I'm stressed out. Everybody go for a walk. Maybe I will do that someday. And with no shame, but,
right.
But I was like, I am just going to choose to not add any more noise. I want to scroll through TikTok right now, but I'm not going to do that. I would like to hop on Instagram and just see what people are doing for absolutely no reason. But what's that going to do? I'm going to end up on somebody's Instagram story and somebody's kid is going to be smiling. And then I'm going to get an attitude problem because I'm going to be like, oh, they think they're so perfect. And then I'm going to end up judging them for no reason. Or I'm going to end up texting one of my friends complaining about my child, which there's nothing wrong with venting to my friends. But sometimes I just need 30 seconds by myself and I don't need to vent to somebody.
Yeah.
And so I laid there. It was not 30 seconds. It was somewhere between 10 and 30 minutes. I don't know. I lost track of time. And I literally threw the blanket off of like from my head and I literally said out loud, I can parent. Like I felt so refreshed. It's not always that instantaneous, but that's just an instant where I had to acknowledge like this is not about the noise that my child is adding to my life or the noise that my life is adding. This is about the fact that I need to not add to whatever is happening around me. And then sometimes it's quite like a lot more literal and it really is just like being quiet. You know, it is about shutting out all the actual noise. It's about not having to, and sorry, I'm saying this on your podcast, but it's about not listening to a podcast on the morning drive. And it's about not watching TV to fall asleep, but it's about pressing into that quiet time. Even if it's hard.
Yeah. And you talk about that in your book about doing a lot of listening, doing a lot of consuming, you know, your life has been surrounded by noise. I mean, happy noise and, you know, music and laughter and just like a lot of noise. I don't think we even realize how much there is noise around us.
Right.
But what I do love about your book is that you are saying, hey, it's not that you're going to be able to eliminate every single noise from your life. There has to be a way that we can still retreat even in the midst of that. And there are practices and there are ways to do that. And that I believe that's super pleasing to the Lord. So I love that you actually are saying here, you know, you're not talking about something that we can't attain. You're talking about in the midst of your loud world, find quiet. And I think that's a powerful message. I really do.
Well, yeah. I mean, thank you so much for that. First of all, I was posting something on social media today because I just thought it was funny. So I was like, I'm going to put it on the internet. But don't worry, this one wasn't edgy. But I posted about like how sometimes self-care can seem so intimidating because it's so often like, girl, like go get you a spa day. I'm like, who gonna pay for a spa day? And who gonna wash the baby? Is my husband gonna let her eat gas station food for lunch? Like, no, like that. I'm not going to no spa. I don't want nobody touching me. Like, you go to a spa, but have they showered? Like, I just I have a lot of anxiety about massages. I'm not against them. I just have anxiety about it. But I was like, I have all these alarms on my phone that literally say like, go eat food. Like, I have an alarm that literally like, I'm so I'm quite OCD, like genuinely, and so I'm very strategic about it. But like every day I have a different alarm for like different times, and then I'll like reset them every few weeks, and they'll say things like go stand on the porch and stuff like that. Those little things are such significant parts of self-care. You know, yes, self-care is a spa day. Yes, self-care is a weekend away. Yes, self-care is like this whole list of things. You know, it's treat yourself. It's, you know, don't look at the bank account, just swipe it up, boo. But it's also go eat some lunch. Like go eat some chicken nuggets and don't feel guilty about it. Go eat you a salad, but not because you feel forced to do it, because you like kale. Those little practical everyday things are also a part of self-care, finding quiet, just taking care of yourself, and just really honestly taking care of the body that God has given us and the life He's given us.
I think that's such a good message and one that we bypass. I think we think that it's like this big spa day when in actuality we really just do need to remember to eat lunch or breathe or like unclench our jaw. I mean these might sound silly, like silly things, but I can tell you carrying tension in our bodies and not caring for ourselves in that way, it's not being wise with what we do. So I appreciate that message. Okay, I want you to answer these for me. Like these are just like super quick answers.
Oh, I love these.
The time I am most myself is.
When I don't have on pants, but like in a not, not like in a, well, I'm married, so, but also just like in a regular way. You know what I mean?
Talking about you. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can recover from this one. You're talking about we call them like hard pants, like regular pants. You're
Any pain, no, not even
Oh, you're talking about
shorts.
any
I mean,
pants.
I have on undies. I'm not just commandoing it, Lisa. It's my house. I could commando if I want to. Yeah, it's like
Okay.
when you don't have on pants, you act different. You're just like, yep, I could eat. Because when you have on pants, you have to think about, like, oh, how much can I eat? It's not going to fit after.
This is not the plot twist I expected, but I enjoy it. Okay, we all needed that laugh. The thing I want more than anything for Bella is.
Oh man, I just want her to find her worth and value in Jesus, in her relationship with Jesus. That is all I can ask for her.
That'd be good. That's good.
Tried to be serious on that one.
Yeah. Right now, quiet for me looks like.
Well, it's car rides with her. When I was growing up, my mom would have very intentional times where she would not play music or talk radio in the car. And I've told you that Joe is like my favorite thing to listen to in the car with her because it's so short. And you know the alternating episodes, and it's perfect with in car rides with her because I'll listen to it, and then by the time it ends is by the time she's kind of like getting a little antsy in the car. So we'll just sit in the quiet and talk and chat and sing. She doesn't really speak a lot of English, but we try. So that's really fun.
I love that. And I love that I'm with you and Bella, that we're all hanging out together
Yes,
on these
exactly.
days. Well, okay, this show is called Jesus Over Everything. What does that personally mean to you?
I think the reason why I want what I said for my daughter is because it's something that I'm continually pursuing. It's just finding my worth and value in Christ and Christ alone. You know, I love being married. I love being a mom. I love being a sister. But sometimes I do find my value in those things, and I'll start to find maybe a little like my joy. I'll find joy in like, oh, I bought them the perfect gift, or we got to FaceTime, and then I'll find myself almost like di not distancing, but kind of distancing myself from Jesus because I'll just be feeling good. And I'm like, oh, I'm good. Like, but those are the times where I need him the most because he should be my greatest joy. And so that's something that I'm just daily working on. And yeah.
That's so very true and so real. Well, because you are a Joe listener, you know my last question, and I ask it of every single guest, but here it is. What is the last thing that you would say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
That love keeps no record of wrongs. And that's who he is. He is gracious.
I love it. I love you. I'm so glad you came on. You've been good for my soul today. And this whole thing has been fun from your answer about what makes you feel the most free or the most yourself to every single thing we've talked about. It's been a joy. You're a joy. Thank you for being on, Joe.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. For more information on my writing, speaking, and free resources, go to lisawhittle.com. You'll find everything there. And hey, I'd love to connect with you on social media, so find me on all the usual places. Instagram is my favorite, by the way.